Chapter 8 The next day dawned cold and clear. Ramon woke slowly, drifting into consciousness so gradually that he was never quite sure when he passed the dividing line between sleep and wakefulness. Even when he had come fully awake, he remained very still, wrapped in his cloak, savoring the sounds and smells of morning. It was snug and warm within the folds of his alien garment, but the outside air was crisp and chilly on his face, and fragrant with the distinctive cinnamon tang scent of the ice root forest. Ramon could hear the rush and gurgle of the nearby stream, the whistling calls of small birds up with the sun, and off in the distance, the odd booming cry of a descamisado returning to its lair in the trees after a long night of hunting. Although his body ached from sleeping on the hard, stony ground, and his bladder was full enough to be painful, Ramon was reluctant to stir. It was peaceful lying there. Peaceful and familiar. The discomforts were old friends. How many times had he woken alone in the forest like this, after a hard day of prospecting? Many, he thought. Too many to count. Too many to recall. It was almost possible to pretend that this was just another morning, like all those others, that nothing had changed, that it had all been a bad dream. He held that thought closely for a while, reluctant to release it. It was a lie, but it was a comforting lie, so he took his time in waking. He opened his eyes carefully, and found himself staring off through the opening of the lean-to toward the west. The tall ice roots seemed to have an azure glow playing about their tops, where dawn had broached them. Beyond them, to the far southwest, he saw a handful of bright stars, fading now as the sun came up. Fiddler's Bow, the distinctive northern constellation from which Fiddler's Jump took its name, since that was the southernmost point from which the bow could be seen. He watched until the last bright star had been swallowed by the sky. Then he stirred, and the illusion of safety and normality died as he felt the Sahel pull against the soft flesh of his throat. Ramon pushed himself reluctantly to a sitting position. Manek still stood outside the lean-to, beads of dew on its swirling, oil-sheen skin. Its quills were stirring in the morning wind. Seemingly, it hadn't moved since he had gone to sleep, standing still as a stone, watching him throughout the night. Ramon suppressed a shiver at the thought. As Ramon groaned and climbed to his feet, he saw that the alien's eyes were open, and said, "What, monster? You waiting for something?"
"Yes," it said. "You have returned to a functional state. Sleep is now complete."
Ramon scratched his belly under the robe, and yawned until he felt his jaw might dislocate. Twigs and scraps of leaf had found their way into the lean-to and knotted themselves in his hair. He combed them out with his fingers. Other than that, the shelter had been solid, well-crafted, dry, and just the right size. The policeman had even left a layer of ice root fronds under the bedding to reflect up the heat of his body in the night. He'd spent some time in the wild.
"The sleep is now complete," the alien repeated.
"I heard you the first time," Ramon said. "Yes, the sleep is fucking complete." "Your kind, they do not sleep either, eh?"
"Sleep is a dangerous state. It takes you outside the flow. It is an unnecessary cessation of function. The need for sleep is a flaw in your nature. Only inefficient creatures need to be unconscious half their lives."
"Yeah," Ramon said, yawning. "Well, you should try it sometime."
"The sleep is complete," Manek said. "It is time to start fulfilling your function."
"Not so fast. I've got to piss."
"You made piss before."
"Well, I'm an ongoing fucking process," Ramon said, misquoting a priest he'd heard once preaching in the plaza at Diego Town. The sermon had been about the changing nature of the soul, the man who was delivering it red-faced and sweaty. Ramon and Pauel Dominguez had thrown sugared almonds at him. It wasn't something he'd thought of in years, and yet he could recall it now as clearly as if it had happened moments before. He wondered whether the alien goo in which he'd been incarcerated might have done something to his memory. He had heard that men waking from stasis sometimes suffered episodes of amnesia or powerful dislocation. Now, standing before a mesh-barked pseudo-pine and pissing at its base, Ramon found more strange rushes of memory returning to him. Martin Casaus, his first friend when he'd come to Diego Town, had lived by the port in a two-room apartment with butter-yellow bamboo flooring that peeled up at the corners. They'd gotten drunk there every night for a month, singing and sucking down beer. Martin had told him stories about being out in the forest, working as a trapper, tricking a chupacabra into a spear pit with fresh meat. And Ramon had made up sexual exploits from his time in Mexico, each one more lurid and improbable than the last. Martin's landlady had come once and threatened to have them both arrested, and Ramon had exposed himself. He remembered the old woman's shocked expression, the way her hands had fluttered, unsure whether his penis was an insult to her or a threat. It was like seeing a recording of it, a flashback as powerful as the experience, and then gone again, and only a memory. Ramon scratched his belly idly, fingertips moving over the smooth curve of his skin. Poor old Martin. He wondered what had happened to the bastard. Nothing, he had to imagine, worse than what he himself was going through now. "You don't piss either, do you?" Ramon said, shaking the last drops from his penis.
"The voiding of waste is necessary only because you ingest improper foods,"
Manek replied.
"Eik provides nourishment without waste. It is so designed in order to increase efficiency. Your food is full of poisons and inert substances that your body cannot absorb. This is why you must make piss and dump. This is primitive and unnatural."
Ramon chuckled. "Primitive, maybe," he said, "but you are the one who goes against nature. We are animals, both of us. Animals sleep and eat other animals, and shit and fuck. You do none of those things. So who is the unnatural one, eh?" Manek looked down on him.
"A being possessed of rete hue has the capacity to be more than an animal," it said. "If an ability exists, it must be used. Therefore you are unnatural, because you cling to the primitive, although you possess the ability to transcend that state."
"Clinging to the primitive can be a lot of fun," Ramon started to say. But Manek, who seemed to be growing impatient, cut him off.
"We have begun with making piss," it said, "and we have returned to this place in the cycle. We are now prepared. You will enter the Unea. We will proceed."
"Unea?" Manek paused.
"The flying box," it said.
"Oh, but I need to eat still. You can't have a man go without breakfast."
"You can continue 4 weeks without food. This is what you reported in the night."
"Doesn't mean I'd want to," Ramon said. "You want me working at my best. I've got to eat. Even machines need to be refueled to work."
"No more delays,"
Manek said, fingering the Sahel ominously.
"We go now."
Ramon considered objecting, claiming that there was some further biological function that humanity required. He could spit for an hour or two, just to take more time. But Manek seemed resolute, and he didn't want it to resort to the Sahel in order to get him to obey. "Okay, okay, and I'm coming. Just wait a second." Ramon had done what he could for the policeman. Any bastard who'd come out to arrest him should be fucking grateful for what he'd done so far. Ramon snatched up the leaf-wrapped strips of smoked fish he'd prepared the night before, and followed the alien back to its bone-white box. A cold breakfast in transit would have to do. His belly lurched as the strange ship took to the air. They flew south and west. Behind them, to the north, were the tall peaks of the Sierra Hueso, their upper slopes now obscured by wet, churning gray cloud. It was snowing back there, behind, above. South, the world flattened into forested lowland, then tilted down toward the southern horizon, steaming and slopping like a soup plate, puddled with marshes on the edge of sight. Also on the edge of sight, from up here, only a thin silver ribbon in a world of green and blue and orange trees and black stone, was the Rio Embudo, the main channel of the great river system that drained the Sierra Hueso and all the Northlands. Hundreds of kilometers to the southwest, Fiddler's Jump sat high on its rocky, red-veined bluffs above the same river, its ramshackle wooden hotels and houses full of miners and trappers and lumberjacks, its docks crowded with ore barges and vast log floats soon to be launched downstream to Swan's Neck. It was there, to the safety and lights and raucous humanity of Fiddler's Jump, that the policeman was almost surely headed. How would he do it? Anybody who could construct a lean-to as well as the policeman had would have no trouble constructing a raft out of the materials ready to hand. Once he reached the Rio Embudo and built his raft, he'd be off down the river to Fiddler's Jump, much easier and faster than walking through the thick, tangled forest. It was where he would have gone, and what he would have done had he been stranded out here without a van, desperate and alone. And he was sure that the policeman would do the same. The aliens had been smart to use him as their hunting dog after all. He did know what the policeman would do, where he would go. He could find him. How long would he have to stall to give the policeman time to get away? Could he have reached the river yet? From the foothills of the Sierra Hueso, it was a long way on foot through rough terrain. On the other hand, a number of days had gone by. It would be close. Below them now was another thick forest of ice root, tall, gaunt trees with translucent blue-white needles, like a million tiny icicles. They flew on. Here, a great tower of Babel Hive had pushed up through the trees, the strange, metallic-looking insects like living jewelry, swarming up to menace them in defense of their queen as they passed. A clearing empty but for the wide, six-legged carcass of a vaquero, the horse-like body half-eaten by a chupacabra and left to rot. The ice roots again. They were circling. How did Manek intend to find the policeman? "What are we looking for?" Ramon called over the sound of the wind rushing past them. "You can't see anything from up here. You got sensors on this thing?"
"We are aware of much," Manek said.
"We? I'm not aware of a fucking thing."
"The Yunea participates in my flow. The Sahel participates. It is your nature that you must fail to participate. That is why you are an occasion of great sorrow. But it is your Tata Croida, and therefore it is to be accepted."
"I don't want to participate in your goddamn flow," Ramon said. "I just asked if you had some kind of sensors on this thing. I wasn't asking you to put out on the first date."
"Are these noises needed?" Manek asked.
If Ramon had had any faith that the aliens experienced emotions a human being might comprehend, he would have said that the thing sounded annoyed.
"The search is the expression
of your Tata Croida, whatever the fuck that is," Ramon said.
"Whatever you say. Since I'm not able to do this flow thing, maybe this is the best I can do, eh? Make some friendly conversation?" The quills on Manek's head rose and fell rapidly. Its thick head jounced from one side to another. It turned to him, and the slats of the bone-pale box thickened, the sound of wind lessening.
"You are correct," Manek said. "This spitting of air is the primary communication available to you." It is right that I should attempt to engage your higher functions to aid you in avoiding Aubrey. And if I better understand the mechanism of an uncoordinated self, the nature of the man will also become clearer.
That half sounded like an apology, monster, Ramon said.
This is a strange term. I have not fallen into Aubrey. I have no reason to express regret.
Yeah, fine. Be like that.
But if you wish to speak, I will participate in this fashion. I do indeed have sensors. They are of the nature of the Unea, as the drinking of your flow is of the nature of the Sahel, or the management and direction of this form,
and the alien gestured at itself,
is mine. The man, however, is much like the other creatures, and discovering the channels which he has been bound into is subtle.
Ramon shrugged. Their best bet of catching the policeman was to head west for the Rio Embudo, get well south of where he could have reached on foot, and then wait there by the riverside until the bastard came floating by on his raft. But if the alien didn't see it that way, Ramon felt no particular impulse to enlighten his captor. If the alien wanted to swing uselessly back and forth all day like a missionary's balls, Ramon was fine with that.
What are you going to do with the poor fucker when you catch him? Correct the illusion of his existence, Manek said. To be observed cannot happen. The illusion that it has happened is prime contradiction, gesu, the negation of reality. If we were to be seen, we would not be what we are. We would never have been what we are. That which cannot be found cannot be found. This is contradiction. It must be resolved.
That doesn't make sense. The man, he's already seen you.
He is still within illusion. If he is prevented from reaching his kind, the information cannot diffuse. He will have been corrected. The illusion of his existence will have been denied. If he is real, however, we cannot be.
Ramon unwrapped the yerba leaf, sucked the meat from his strip of smoked fish, then dropped the empty bone on the slats at his feet.
You know, monster, to make as little sense as you, I have to drink for half a night.
I do not understand.
That's the point, cabron.
Your consumption of liquid affects your communication. Was your time at the camp insufficient to express this?
That was river water, Ramon said impatiently. Liquor, I mean. Drink liquor. I've got the only devil in hell that's never heard of hard drink.
Explain to me hard drink.
Ramon scratched his belly. The smooth skin under his fingertips seemed momentarily odd. How could he explain drinking, really drinking, to a thing with a half-crazed devil's mind?
There's a thing. It's a liquid, Ramon said. It's called alcohol. You get it from things fermenting. Fermenting. Breaking down. Potatoes make vodka, and grapes make wine, and grain makes beer. And when you drink it, when a man drinks it, it lifts him up out of himself. You understand? All the things he's supposed to be, they don't bother him so much anymore. All the petty fucking shit that ties him up, it lets loose a little. Piss. I don't know. This is like telling a virgin what it's like to fuck.
It loosens bindings, Manek said. It makes you free.
Memory assaulted Ramon again. The world vanished. He was 14. 2 long years stretching out before him until he would elect to join a job gang and get off Earth. August brought thunderstorms to the mountains of Mexico, great white clouds that went gray-black at the base. Having come down from his tiny cliff-top pueblo, Ramon was living in an older boy's shack in a squatter's village on the north slope of a mesa near Mexico City. The day of his memory, he'd been sitting on the misshapen mass of rotten wood and worn plastic that he and the older boy jokingly called their front porch, watching the clouds form and rise toward the sky. The storm would reach them by night, Ramon had guessed. He was trying to judge whether the shack could withstand another hard storm, or if it would collapse under wind and water, when the older boy appeared, sauntering down the thin street of mud and rocks that separated one line of hovels from the next. He had a girl with him, his arm around her waist. He had a bottle in the other. Ramon didn't ask where he'd found either of them. He remembered the astringent fire of the gin, the fascination and repulsion of listening to the older boy and the girl fuck while he sat outside, drinking and counting the seconds between lightning flashes and thunder. By the time the rain came, the older boy had passed out, and Ramon, drunk, had split the last of the gin with the girl, and she'd let him fuck her too. The wind had rattled the walls. Rain leaked in, running down the windows in rivulets while he bent over her, thrusting, and she looked away. It was the best night Ramon remembered having on Earth, possibly the best night he'd had since. He couldn't remember the older boy's name now, but he could see the mole on the girl's neck, just above her collarbone, the scar on her lip where it had split badly once and healed strangely. He only ever thought of her when he was drinking gin, and he preferred whiskey. Manek's arm touched his shoulder, steadying him. Ramon batted it away without thinking.
"There was turbulence," Manek said. "You gained focus, but its reference was obscure."
"I remembered something," Ramon said. "That's all. One time, when I was drinking, when it made me free."
"Ah, fidelity continues to increase. This is an excellent thing."
"Your tatacroida gains focus."
"But you are still unflowing."
"Yeah, well, and you're still fucking ugly. You wanted to know about drinking hard liquor? Here. Hard liquor makes a man able to stand the things he can't stand. It makes him free the way nothing else can. When a man's drunk, it's like being alone. Everything's possible. Everything's good. It's like having lightning in your hands. There's nothing that makes a man feel so complete."
"So hard drink is good. It increases flow pathways and focuses intention. It makes freedom, and this is among the man's central desires. To drink is to express virtue."
In the alleyway, the European sat down, hand to his belly. The crowd drew back. Ramon felt again the cold sense of having been betrayed by them.
"It's got its good points," he said. "Why are you asking me all these damn questions? Aren't you supposed to be hunting someone down?"
"I wish to participate in you," the alien said. "You cannot sense flow. These words are your only channel."
The thing sounded like the ship psychiatrist from Ramon's jump out. Ramon lifted his hands, palms out, pushing the thing's attention away.
"I'm tired of talking," Ramon said. "Leave me the fuck alone."
"You may require a period of assimilation,"
Manek agreed, as if they were talking about a lift tube that needed tuning. The alien turned away. Ramon leaned against the thin white slats of the box, peering out over the shimmering orange and black sea of leaves below them. If he hadn't been drunk, he probably wouldn't have killed the European. He would never have come out so far, the constabulary silently on his heels. But to be in Diego Town and not be drunk was unthinkable. As well tell him to fly a van without fuel or dig a mine by hand. It was how he could stand people. Ramon was a drinker, and a good one, but the bottle didn't control him. When he was here, out in the world, alone and away from the press of humanity. He didn't need the whiskey, so he didn't drink it. A single bottle could last him a month in the field, and half a night in the city. He wasn't a drunk. That was his proof of it. The first sign he had that something had changed came when the flying box stopped suddenly, hovering silently in the air as if they'd been hung there by a rope from heaven. Ramon looked down, squinting against the early evening sun, but the trees below them seemed no different from any of the other 100,000 trees they'd flown over. "There's something?" Ramon demanded.
"Yes,"
Manek answered, but said nothing more. The flying box descended. This new camp was larger than the one they'd left. The lean-to was larger, big enough to sit up in, and a fire pit made of stones and sand held the remains of several fires. The fugitive might have remained here for a day if he'd kept the fire going the whole time, or several if he'd only used it to cook. Manek led the way, moving slowly across the small clearing, its head swaying back and forth, keeping time to some slow, internal music. Ramon trotted behind, led by his neck. A pile of sug beetle shells glittered in the dapples of sunlight. A pile of flat fur pelts lay abandoned, one of them gnawed at and then ignored by some small, toothy scavenger. The gray-blue butt of a cigarette lay withered beside the lean-to. How far, Ramon wondered, had the policeman traveled? 3 days the man had been running before Manek had led Ramon into the hunt. Another day since. If the man had spent a single night at the first campsite, and two here, that meant he now had only 1 day's lead on them. Ramon silently cursed the cop for dawdling. Everything depended on the bastard getting to the river, floating away to the south, and bringing back help. The governor, the police, maybe even the Enya, and some alien security force from the Enya ships that would be arriving any day now. That would be best. Humanity's great alien patron species rolling through like moss-covered boulders and licking Manek to death. Ramon chuckled, but the alien ignored him, continuing its inspection. There were several places, Ramon saw, where the policeman had ventured out into the forest, and several where he had returned. Broken branches and scuffed, turned litter showed it as clearly as if he'd left signs. This was a base of operations, then. The man had some plan or thought deeper than simple flight. Perhaps something he was searching for. Could the constabulary have an emergency beacon hidden somewhere nearby? It seemed too great a coincidence, but the thought alone was enough to make Ramon's heart beat faster. Or perhaps the man was an idiot, and still thought himself the hunter and Ramon the game, in which case Manek would surely find him, kill him, and return Ramon to the sickening darkness and noise of the alien hive, never to be heard from again. Manek stopped at the lean-to and reached down, stirring the leaves the man had used as bedding. Something among the green and blue leaves tumbled, dirty white and the black red of old blood. Manek leaned forward and made a rapid clicking sound that Ramon interpreted as pleasure. Ramon scratched his elbow, vaguely uneased by the sense that something had gone wrong. "Que es?" he asked. The alien lifted a scrap of cloth, a shirt sleeve soaked in blood. The cloth was wrinkled and bunched where it had been tied as a bandage or tourniquet, and then hardened as the blood dried. "Looks like you hit the poor pendejo pretty good," Ramon said, trying to sound pleased. Manek didn't reply, only dropped the bandage back into the disturbed litter. It paced off toward the fire pit, the Sahel extending and narrowing, but still pulling Ramon to follow. Something glittered in the dirt beside the rough, gathered stones of the pit, silver and blue. The alien paused, considering it. Ramon walked up to the thing's side, and then, divided between wonder and fear, he knelt and put the tips of his fingers on the cigarette case that Elena had given him. "This is mine," he said softly.
"It is the artifact of the man,"
Manek said, as if agreeing. No, Ramon said. No, this is mine. This belongs to me. The police. They couldn't have got this unless they found...
He half scrambled back to the lean-to, scooping up the blood-soaked sleeve. The cloth was rough canvas, designed to last for months in the field. The button at the sleeve's end was half-shattered.
This is my shirt. The pendejo's wearing my shirt.
Ramon turned to Manek, a sudden towering rage roaring in his ears. He waved the bloody cloth in his clenched fist.
Why does that fucking son of a bitch have my shirt?
The quills rose and fell on the huge alien's crest. Its oil-sheened skin swirled. Only the knowledge that the Sahel would visit him with unimaginable pain kept Ramon from attacking it.
Answer me!
I do not understand. The garment with which you were provided
is your shirt!
Ramon shouted, plucking at the alien robe.
You fucking devils made this. You make me wear it. This is my shirt! Mine! I wore it from Diego Town. I bought it. I wore it. It's mine! And some...
Martin Casaus appeared suddenly before his mind's eye, a memory as powerful and transporting as a drug flashback.
Her name had been Liana, the one he'd told Griego about. She'd been a cook at the Los Rancheros Grill down by the river. Martin had thought he was in love with her, and for a week he'd made up poems that started by comparing her eyes to the stars and ended near dawn. And after a bottle of cheap whiskey, talking about what it would be like to fuck her.
Ramon had seen her in the sleazy all-night bar they all called Rick's Café Américain, even though there was some other name on the alcohol license. Ramon had been drunk. He saw her again, black hair pulled back from an oval face, the lines at the corners of her mouth, the deep, saturated red of the wallpaper behind her. He'd seen her, and he'd remembered all the images he'd endured, all the fantasies Martin had spun of her body. When she'd looked up, caught his eye, it was like water flowing downhill. He hadn't had a choice. He'd just gone to her. Martin, before him now, had the sheet-metal hook in his hand. Ramon dropped the bloody rag at Manek's feet, his hand going to his belly. Martin's hand had looked flayed and skinless, but the blood had been Ramon's. The pain had been hideous, the bleeding so bad Ramon had felt it in his crotch and thought he'd pissed himself. He opened the alien robe, half expecting the Martin of his memory to swing again to cut him further, though when it had actually happened, the man had broken down weeping. Ramon's fingers touched a smooth, almost unblemished belly. The thick, knobby scar was gone, only a hairline of white in its place. He realized now that he'd known it. His fingers had kept straying to the missing wound, his body knowing better than his mind that something was missing. The roughness of the alien cloth against his skin, the calluses gone from his fingertips and feet. Slowly, he pulled back his sleeve. The scar he'd gotten in the machete fight with Chulo Lopez at the bar outside Little Dog. The trails of puckered white flesh that Elena's fingertips opened and reopened when they tore at each other during half-crazed sex were gone. There were no cigarette stains on his fingers. None of the small nicks and discolorations and calluses that were the legacy of a lifetime working with one's hands. Over the years, his arms had been burned almost black by the sun. But now his skin was smooth and unblemished and pale brown as an eggshell. An awareness, half buried, rose in him, and he went cold. He had not been breathing in that tank. His heart had not been beating.
"What did you do to me?" Ramon whispered, horror-struck. "What the fuck did you do to me? To my body?"
"Ah, interesting," Manek said. "You are capable of kahatane. This may not serve us well.
I doubt the man is capable of multiple integration, and even if he were, it would not produce this disorientation. You must take care not to diverge.
It will not focus your tatakroida if you become too much unlike the man.
What are you talking about, monster?
Your distress, Manek said. You are becoming aware of who you are.
I am Ramon Espejo.
No, the alien said. You are not.